United States against Padilla. Mr. Tunick, let's give counsel a chance to get situated, all right? Thank you.
May it please the court, your honors, Ms. Miller. Your honors, Felipe Padilla was sentenced to 27 years in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. The guideline range in this case, as cited in the brief, is 12 and a half to 15 and a half years. And in 3 days, on November 1st, 2007, the guideline range will change, and the recommended advisory guideline range will be 10.8 to 13 and a half years. At the high end, it would double Mr. Padilla's sentence that Judge Derjagian gave him. The basic issue on this appeal as to his sentence is the lack of analysis of the 3553A factors that Judge Derjagian engaged in.
What is it your belief that the level of proof is necessary for him to find crack instead of just cocaine?
Judge, I think I cited preponderance of the evidence. I agree with the government in that respect. I think the judge went beyond the scope and actually made a determination as beyond a reasonable doubt. But I believe the standard is preponderance of the evidence. Preponderance of the evidence.
And was there ever a request by the defense to have an independent expert test the drugs?
Well, Judge,
or to test for sodium bicarbonate?
I think we made the both defendants actually filed a motion to test the substance. The judge determined that it was premature, that it was a moot issue in essence, and I think both of us were going to wait to potential sentencing issues for that to happen. Unfortunately, the drugs were destroyed by the Cook County Sheriff's Office. So we did not make a request for an independent expert, but I believe it was premature to make that request in light of the charge and what the government needed to prove at trial if necessary. But I would like to get to the merits of the sentence in essence. That is the second issue, whether or not there was sufficient evidence of crack cocaine. The first issue was the reasonableness of the 27-year sentence in light of the guideline, the advisory guidelines, which were much, much less. And specifically, with Judge Derjagian didn't engage in any analysis as to the mitigation in this case. He only indicated in the record that Mr. Padilla pled guilty to an extremely serious offense. Well, as the court is well aware, this was only a 121-gram case. There's no allegations of violence. There's no weapons of any sort. And Mr. Padilla's role in the offense was simply a broker of the cocaine deal. He wasn't the source of the cocaine. He actually called the source who provided the cocaine. He didn't cook it up or anything. There was no discussion at all about Mr. Padilla's role in the offense. And that is the first thing a court must consider, the nature and characteristics of the offense. This was a 121-gram case with no violence, no weapons, and he was not the source of the cocaine. There was no discussion of the nature and characteristic of the offense at all by Judge Derjagian. He simply said that drugs tear at the very fabric of society, split families apart, and cost people their lives. Something that he's indicated in other cases, and is nothing specific to this case at all. Judge Derjagian further said defendant's actions have contributed to the ongoing drug problem in the country. And he said, the sentence I'm imposing is a just punishment for the offense. Well, 27 years for a 121-gram case, in light of the guidelines, I submit to you, is not a just punishment for the offense by any stretch of the imagination. And he further concluded the public will be protected by this sentence. Well, yes, the public will be protected by having Mr. Padilla incarcerated for 27 years. But is that greater than necessary? As 3553 specifically states, that it should be a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary. 27 years, I submit to this court, is greater than necessary, especially in light of the guideline calculations in this case.
He did make some reference in his sentencing to the fact that the defendant has a GED degree and some college courses, and that he admitted he made a mistake, and that his family and his actions have impacted his family, and he's been selfish, and he hurt a lot of people. I mean, he did make reference.
He did state that, Judge, but there was no analysis of it. He didn't go on to say, well, in light of that, I believe that Mr. Padilla was was insincere. He didn't say that he was insincere. He didn't, or that he had done this on prior occasions. He simply stated the party's positions. There was no analysis of the mitigation evidence, and there was mitigation. He took 50 hours of credits, college credits at McMurray College. Although he was incarcerated at the time, his GPA was 3.4 out of a 4 scale. Previous, when he was in high school, it was well below that. He did express his utmost remorse for his conduct and the way it affected his family and society. But there was no analysis of that and how it played into the sentence. He simply stated the party's positions. And as far as with respect to the government's brief, and the judge cited that there was, 17 arrests, also, in addition to his convictions, I submit to you that 15 of the arrests were age 22 or before. 5 of the arrests were simply for possession of cannabis, 2 were for disorderly conduct, and 1 was for an outstanding warrant, and I believe 1 was for a traffic offense.
And so, how many were drug offenses?
For the arrests?
Yeah.
I believe there was 1 drug offense, Judge. I can say that for sure, but I do remember...
Assuming cannabis was not a drug offense.
Judge, I was talking about the arrest, actually.
Yeah.
But there was 1 conviction for drugs, based on the PSI. Yeah. I would like to also just submit to you, I think I'll save the, I'm going to continue on. I'm going to go into my rebuttal time. The specific, with respect to the second issue, that is whether or not the government proved by preponderance of the evidence that the substance was crack cocaine. There's no question these drugs were destroyed. There's no question that both defendants previously filed a motion to test those substances. So the only evidence that the government submitted was the testimony of Agent Gomez at the sentencing.
Who said it looked like it to him, and he was familiar with it?
He said it looked like it. He didn't actually say it looked like it. He said it smelled like it to him. He didn't actually say he saw the actual cocaine. The actual observations of the cocaine came from the confidential informant, who actually submitted a written statement. The confidential informant called it rock cocaine in a white powdery form. I believe specifically.
I read it. It's in there.
Yes, good. And I submit to the court that they could have produced the confidential informant to testify as to what the substance actually looked like. We didn't have the substance. It was destroyed. There was no one from the chain of custody who actually testified to what the substance looked like. So all we had was Agent Gomez's basic hearsay.
Why don't you leave enough?
Yes, I'm going to listen to say the additional anyway. 3
And just one thing. Agent Gomez was a Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms agent, not a DEA agent.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Tunick. We'll hear now from Ms. Miller.
Good morning. May it please the Court. It is the government's position that the sentence that was imposed in this case was both reasonable and was sufficiently supported by the record.
Did the government make a recommendation of sentence?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
What was it?
We did recommend that the court impose a sentence above the advisory guideline range, and we specifically recommended within the range of 262 to 395 months. One thing that Mr. Tunick has pointed out, that the advisory guideline range in this case was 151 to 188 months imprisonment. While that is correct, there was a statutory mandatory minimum sentence also in this case of 240 months.
241 months?
240 months, essentially 20 years.
And when you look at the record, it appears that the judge added that additional time mainly because of his record. Right?
Exactly, Your Honor.
And, of course, in the criminal history calculation, his record was calculated. And did the judge make a specific finding saying that, you know, the guidelines, at least the advisory guidelines, were not adequate, and therefore that's why he went up higher?
The judge very much focused on the defendant's criminal history.
Right, which, as I said, the points had already been added for that.
Right. District judge noted was that the defendant had 29 criminal history points, something that was far above what was needed for a criminal history category 6. He was He also noted the fact that many of those offenses were weapons-related offenses, as well as offenses that occurred while the defendant was incarcerated. That spoke to the defendant's history and characteristics, something that the district judge is required to consider under 3553A. And so I think it's fair to say, too, that is the defendant's criminal history was at what the district judge primarily focused on in imposing the sentence that it did.
And speaking to counsel's point that what the court did was basically rehash what had been said rather than doing an analysis, saying, you know, I've looked at these things, but even though he's apologizing now, it doesn't make any difference when you look at his track record. I can't believe him, so I'm going to enhance a sentence.
The district judge did not speak to each and every argument that was made, you know, with respect to, it certainly noted the fact that the defendant had received education, also flat out did say that he agreed with the government with respect to the criminal history, and we were speaking and using departure language, but he agreed that a sentence above the guidelines was appropriate based on defendant's criminal history.
But what I'm saying, you said he doesn't have to go through every little thing. He doesn't. But he doesn't make any reference at all to the education, to the fact that he said he made a mistake, that he hurt so many people. I mean, he says he's failed society, but now he speaks from his heart and that he will try to continue with his education and wants to succeed in life. I mean, he doesn't make any comment on that. I mean, in terms of how that plays with respect to the sentence.
No, the district judge did not specifically talk about the defendant's education. The government did respond to that argument at the sentencing hearing and said that the education that the defendant received was based on classes that he took during the time of his incarceration and that the defendant returned to committing other crimes following those periods of incarceration.
Well, let me ask you now about this crack cocaine. Are there differences between crack cocaine and other types of cocaine base in terms of smell and appearance?
According to the testimony of the agent, there is a difference with respect to the smell, that the smell of crack cocaine was unique in that it was a pungent, strong odor.
And that's distinguishable between cocaine base? We know there's a difference. We've had a lot of cases with the difference between powder and crack cocaine. I'm asking about crack cocaine and cocaine base. There's a difference in terms of smell between cocaine base and crack cocaine?
He specifically said that the smell was consistent with crack cocaine.
Yeah, but was it consistent with the other, too?
Right.
He did not say. Based on his training and experience.
Paused on the threshold of a brilliant discovery. I mean, the question is, if the other stuff smells the same way, what difference is it making? And there was not a negative. Right. It smelled like crack cocaine.
Right. That was one of the factors that...
You've been handling cases like this for more than 3 months anyway.
Right.
Have you ever encountered anybody who said that there was a distinct smell of crack cocaine as opposed to cocaine base?
Strict smell of cocaine base as opposed to cocaine?
I mean,
cocaine
base and crack cocaine are the same back and forth. It's an interchangeable thing. Is there a difference in smell that you've heard or knew about between cocaine and crack cocaine?
Yes.
They've testified to. This, besides this case?
No, I have not heard it in another case.
This is the first time you've ever heard that there was such a distinct odor that distinguished crack from cocaine.
It was the first time that I had learned about it, yes.
Yeah.
So then if we don't know whether the substance, if we don't know if there's a difference between the smell and appearance of crack cocaine versus other types of cocaine base, that could be a problem, right?
Your Honor, that was one of the factors that the...
Yeah, but if it's one of the fact is it would still affect if his testimony is to be given any credit at all, it's as an expert, right?
It's based on his training and experience. We did not offer
him. Well, you don't have to offer him. By the nature of that testimony, he's testifying as an expert on the question of cocaine and its smell. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's no predicate for that, if we have no idea where it comes from, except it just popped up in this case for the first time, and I've been playing games with these things longer, I suspect, than by three times that you've been alive, or at least twice. And I've never heard of it either. I've never heard anybody say it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know what the predicate for it is, and I'm not
right.
inclined to swallow it whole.
Right. And I will.
So you're arguing this was newly cooked cocaine?
Well, they definitely were saying that it was newly cooked, but that was also based on the fact that they were the agent who testified was also the undercover agent during the course of this
right.
investigation
right.
who conducted the transaction. So based on statements that were made by the defendant in this case, the defendant, when they were getting impatient waiting for the drugs to arrive, and the defendant was talking about it's drying right now, which the agent testified that he understood that's the end of the cooking process.
Well, that's a splendid understanding, but it's not necessary then. You dry it out anyway. You don't cook it, but you dry it out anyway.
Yeah, because here's my next question. Mm-hmm. Are the terms cooking and drying only used in the making of crack cocaine, or are they also used for other cocaine bases?
It's my understanding, with respect to other cocaine bases, the only other cocaine base that I know of is freebasing, which is typically
yeah.
done by the end user when they're the person.
As the mayor of Washington once
right.
pointed out to the world at large.
Your Honor, one.
And then here's my next question. If the substance really was crack, then why didn't Agent Gomez refer to crack or cooking or drying in his report when he summarized the 926-02 sale?
Because the report itself was just a summary. What he did do in the report was reference the tape, the recording, and also the property receipt, I believe, for the evidence. So basically, the report itself reflected that a transaction had occurred, that it was. That the transaction occurred, that the CI who was used, that the undercover recording was made, and gave the date and time of the transaction.
But of course, the tape of the September 20th 02 conversation was not admitted, right, between the cooperating individual and Mr. Padilla. So we relied on what Gomez said, the ATF agent.
Based on his review of the tape as well as the transcript and his being present during the undercover transaction. So he was asked about whether or not that was an accurate transcript, and what he said was this was consistent with what he remembered, and he did have the opportunity to review the tape, the transcript, and be present for that.
Let me ask you another question about this, too. How common is it to find cocaine base that is not crack on the street? Do you know that?
I don't feel like I'm in the position necessarily to answer that. I think that typically, based on my experience of doing drug cases is worth, typically it is crack cocaine. It seems like the freebasing was more in the 70s, whereas crack cocaine is a more different.
A rose by any other name smells as sweet is what you're suggesting.
I'm sorry?
I said a rose by any other name smells as sweet, but that's...
One thing that I do want to point out is that the motion for the independent expert in this case, there was no motion for an independent expert. The motion that was made was for a motion for the court to hold an evidentiary hearing to determine the nature of the substance. The court denied that motion, and in denying that motion, gave defendants to June 1st of 2005 to file their motion for an independent expert. No such motion was ever filed.
When did we find out it was the stuff had been destroyed?
Your Honor, we learned about it in January of 2006. There was a trial date that was set for January 17th of 2006. We learned about it January 1st of 2006. The motion for the evidentiary hearing, I believe that was filed in May of 2005.
Okay.
And then the agent, was he working an undercover federal investigation, or was it a state investigation?
It was an undercover federal investigation that they jointly worked with the Cook County Sheriff's Police
All
Department.
Right. And now are there any policies about destroying drugs in place when the federal government is working with Cook County?
Judge, there was a policy in Cook County at the time in place. The problem was, and it was an inadvertent destruction of the evidence where the agent just... Not the federal agent, the Cook County Sheriff's Police Department, the drugs were sent to its lab for testing and for storage. Apparently, what had happened, what the agent testified to, is that he just accidentally, inadvertently signed off on the form authorizing the destruction of drugs,
realizing. We hope he didn't smoke it.
I have no reason to think that he did.
I had just one other question. Agent Gomez never explained on the record why the substance couldn't be a different type of cocaine base other than crack, did he?
I do not believe that he did. I think he gave his reasons why he thought it was crack cocaine.
Don't you think it would be a good idea to require witnesses to show they can distinguish between crack and other cocaine bases, given the significant differences in punishment?
Well, he did distinguish between the powder cocaine and the crack cocaine.
Right, but that's not what we're talking about.
Right, but and he said that he has purchased crack cocaine. I think he's conducted somewhere close to 50 investigations, and I'm not exactly sure about these numbers, but in purchased crack cocaine 15 to 20 different times, as well as other forms of cocaine, that being powder cocaine. And for him, based on the smell, the conversation, the statements made by the defendants, but also coupled with the laboratory reports in this case, which found that it was cocaine-based, the description provided in the laboratory reports, as well as statements made by the CI, all of that together formed the basis of...
Right, but even the report that he got back, this said cocaine-based, right? Not crack cocaine.
No, well, there wouldn't be a test for crack cocaine. The laboratory would never be in the position to come back and say that it's crack cocaine.
There's no difference,
crack cocaine
is
a street term.
Is there a difference?
Between?
Crack cocaine and
cocaine-based.
I believe that there is cocaine-based in the form of crack cocaine.
Oh, that almost all cocaine-based is in the form of crack cocaine, isn't it?
That does seem to be consistent with what we're seeing. There is the free base, which is also from cocaine-based, but as I indicated, that seems somewhat no longer the form of choice.
No longer popular.
Exactly. Thank you. We would respectfully request that the sentence imposed by the district court be affirmed based on the findings were based on reliable evidence by a judge found it beyond a reasonable doubt, but the standard was preponderance of the evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Mr. Tunick, how much? I have 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Judge, Your Honors, I would just like to point out to the transcript of the sentencing on page 13. The question was asked by Ms. Miller to Agent Gomez, and are you familiar with some of the differences between crack cocaine versus powder cocaine? And he previously indicated he had purchased cocaine approximately 15 to 20 times. He answered yes, he was familiar with the differences. Could you generally describe the differences based on your training and experience? Ms. Miller asked. Mr. Tunick, I'm going to object. The court, basis of objection, Mr. Tunick, this is within the realm of expert testimony, I believe. And I did object to that testimony. He was offering expert opinions as to the substance. There's nothing in the record.
Was the objection sustained?
No, it was not. And
what did he say then?
The court, okay, the issue whether all cocaine is base is crack has been determined already by the courts of appeals, including the Seventh Circuit. Not all cocaine base is crack. Defense counsel is right. But the witness can testify as to his knowledge of the drugs, and I will allow that testimony.
Okay, what did he say?
He went further and basically offered the opinion he believed it was crack based on the smell and the conversations. And he didn't actually see the drugs. He didn't offer it.
He didn't see it?
No.
Could he smell it if he didn't see it?
Well, they were apparently near him. He was in the vehicle when the transaction took place. He was with the CI when the transaction took place.
If with the chief's permission, I would like to have a present. Did he see it?
Yes, sir. The agent was an undercover agent.
He saw it and smelled it.
That is what he said. He did not testify. He did not provide a description of what he observed in terms of its appearance at the hearing. But he was an undercover agent who purchased the drugs and had them in his possession.
Well, either he saw it or he didn't see it.
Well, he didn't testify he saw it, Judge. So I can only base it on what's on the record. There was nothing in the sentencing hearing that he testified he saw the drugs. He only testified to the smell. So, you know, if he did see the drugs, it's outside the record.
If you say you smell it, that implies you saw it. I mean, unless you
sniffed
with your eyes closed.
No, the drugs could be in a bag. They could be in a bag that could subsequently be turned over to proper chain of custody.
It would be a logical inference that if you saw it or you smelled it, you saw it.
It would be a logical inference to deduce that testimony at the hearing if you saw it. I think that, but Judge, I guess I'm finished. I just would submit that based on all of the arguments, I think this court should reverse the sentence and should also reverse the hearing as to the determination that it was crack. There was insufficient evidence that it was crack cocaine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Mr. Tunick, you served by appointment of the court, did you not? You have the profound thanks of the court for your fine efforts on behalf of your client. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel in the case. The case will be taken under advisement. The court has finished the call of the day, and therefore we will rise until 9:30 tomorrow.